This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. Yeah, April and May are in the books. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my office in New York. How about this? Kevin Pillar had been out since being hit in the face by a fastball from Braves reliever Jacob Webb on May 17th, and he returned to the lineup last night. Incredibly, despite being hit in the face less than 2 weeks, he's back out on the field. That was remarkable. The Mets also activated first baseman Pete Alonso and right-handed setup man Seth Lugo. The Rockies put shortstop Trevor Story on the injured list with elbow inflammation. This was the other day. You wonder how this is going to complicate the Rockies' efforts to trade the all-star shortstop. Jack Flaherty of the St. Louis Cardinals was removed from his start last night because of left side tightness. You hope that that works out for him as they move forward. The Chicago White Sox placed pitcher Michael Kopech on the 10-day injured list because of a strained left hamstring. He's been absolutely dominant this year. The Cubs put righty Trevor Williams on the IL as he deals with appendicitis. Braves outfielder Marcell Ozuna was granted a $20,000 bond Monday on charges of aggravated assault by strangulation and battery against his wife. Ozuna had been jailed since Saturday when police officers in the Atlanta suburb of Sandy Springs said they witnessed him attacking his wife, Genesis, while responding to a 911 call. During his first appearance Monday in Fulton County Magistrate Court, Ozuna was ordered to have no contact with his wife. He's expected to be released from jail. And in court, attorneys said the couple is in the process of getting divorced, and Major League Baseball has opened an investigation into his case. Tim Kirkjian and I will be talking about Ozuna coming up. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Indians, White Sox, and Adam Eaton came through for the White Sox.
The fastball, Eaton tattoos it to right field. Naylor watches it go, it's gone! Bring them both home, 8-5. First two-hit game for Adam Eaton in 20 days, and they're both for extra bases.
Chicago wins that game 8-6. The Braves and Nationals, and Ronald Acuna Jr. continues to build his case for National League MVP.
Ross brings it again, and it's hit well to right field. That ball is out of here in a hurry. Opposite field, line drive laser into the chop house. It is 4-0 Braves.
That from 680, the fan, the Braves win 5-3. Chris Taylor got a huge hit in a huge spot for the Dodgers.
14 pitch.
What a classic at bat for Chris Taylor. Dodgers win that game 9-4. The Rays and the Yankees at the outset of what feels like a huge week for the Yankees with their struggling offense. They have four games against the Rays, then three games against the Red Sox in Yankee Stadium. And on Monday, it did not go well for New York.
There they are, and Austin Meadows swings at the first pitch, sends it deep down the right field line towards the corner at the wall, and it's gone into the front row in the home run porch. At New Yankee Stadium, a homer for Meadows. It's 2-0 Rays.
At from 620 WDA, Rich Hill was outstanding. We're going to have a conversation today about where the Rays should be in baseball's power rankings. Twins and Orioles, and there was kind of a funky-looking play involving Rob Refsnyder, who was playing center field. Ryan Mountcastle was at the plate for the Orioles.
And that ball's crushed into center field. Refsnyder back to the wall. Look out! And he crashes into the wall as that ball is out of here. Refsnyder had no idea where he was. And he ran probably three-quarter speed, looking back at home plate, and ran into a padded wall.
That from Dan Gladden on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Here's what that play sounded like on the Baltimore Orioles radio network.
The 1-1 pitch, Mountcastle belts it to center field. Refsnyder back, he's on the track, he's at the wall, he runs into the wall, and it's over the wall! Ryan Mountcastle ties the game up at one in the fifth inning. Ref Snyder thudding up against the fence, realizing he was out of room as Mountcastle ties this game up at one. Maybe it's going to be Mountcastle who's going to come on. For now, he's tied the game up at one.
Now, before we get to Tim and to Sarah and Alex Cora, The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN+. Featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega coach men's bantamweights and middleweights who put their lives on hold for the chance to pursue their UFC dreams. Stream new episodes every Tuesday, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. And on the latest episode of The Low Post, Zach brings in a whole crew to talk about Mavs Clippers, Suns Lakers, and the Anthony Davis injury, Knicks Hawks, plus a look ahead to a potential Nets Bucks blockbuster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkchen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchen, who covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, you saw the Rob Refsnyder play yesterday, right? When it looked like he had no thought that there was actually an outfield fence and ran into it.
Yeah, you know, he's a really smart guy, but he's an infielder playing the outfield. And even though he's played the outfield quite a bit in his major league career, I've never seen anyone run into a wall quite like that. It was almost like he thought he was 30 feet away from the wall. And I'm not poking fun. That's what the warning track is for. It's a warning that something really hard is coming up here. And it's like he didn't even know it was there. It's a miracle he didn't get hurt worse. But I tend to admire him for not caring that the wall was there, if he knew it or not, because he ran right into it. I've never seen anything quite like that.
Now, I'm going to ask you if you've had comparable moments to that, what he did yesterday, because I've had two in my life. One, it was when I was in college and I wasn't studying. I was at a video game place and they had one of those, picture glass windows and went from floor to ceiling. And I thought what I was going through was an open door, and it was the window when I walked right into it. Thank God nobody saw that. Okay. But the other one, when I was a kid, what I loved to do, because of course there wasn't another kid who lived within a mile and a half of our house. So I wound up, you know, basically throwing a lot of fly balls to myself, pitching wiffle balls against the side of the barn. I was doing that, a game that I do where I'd flip the ball up in the air, see how far I could run to catch it. And I, for whatever reason, I lost my mind and I forgot that my stepfather had parked our hay mower right in the middle of the yard. And so I threw the ball up in the air and I'm running full speed and I'm watching the ball. And I ran into the hay mower, which was about, you know, waist high for me, the top of it. And oh my God, I knocked the wind out of myself and I felt so stupid. What about you? Anything like that?
Well, I didn't grow up with a hay mower in the backyard, Buster. Thank goodness, because as I've told you more than once, nobody would be worse on a farm than me because I can't do any of that stuff. I milked a cow once, a complete disaster. But the only comparable for me was, and it's really nothing compared to yours, I left the trunk open on my car once and I forgot that the trunk was open and I turned the corner and I walked into the trunk and I suffered a pretty good gash over the top of my right eye. And I got knocked to the ground in a pool of blood. That was pretty bad.
Oh my God.
But otherwise, no, nothing bad other than that.
Wow. That was pretty, did you have to go to the hospital or are you like going and getting stitches?
I got a couple of stitches. It was a long time ago, but I'm okay now.
And that must have been a lot of fun to explain to the doctors, the nurse of what happened.
Yeah, it was not good. And I had to explain to the guys at ESPN why I look so stupid on TV because I had cut my head open on a trunk door. You know, and I think the first thing I did was I said, where's the makeup lady? Because I can't go on TV looking like this.
All right. So the Yankees lose again yesterday. Their offense gets shut down again yesterday. I was just on Get Up with Mike Greenberg, and he asked me essentially the question, the Tom Keegan question, is it time to panic? You know, except he asked it on a scale of 1 to 10. What's your level of concern? I said 9.5, that they are absolutely in trouble. And a big part of that is because of how well the Rays are playing, how well the Red Sox are playing. The Yankees are in this week in which they play 7 straight games against those two teams. It started poorly, but the biggest reason is their offense, Tim, stinks. They're 24th out of 30 teams in runs scored. They're in the bottom 5 in slugging percentage. They have 2 positions that have some of the worst offensive production in all of baseball. Their first baseman, their center fielders. It was a great stat Paul Imbecchietti sent me this morning. The Yankees so far this season now have 30 games in which they've scored 3 runs or fewer. The only team in baseball with more games of 3 runs or fewer, the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I said to Greeny that sort of echoing that famous Rick Pitino line when he was coaching the Celtics that, hey, Larry Bird ain't coming through the door. You know, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, they're not coming through the door. It's the same thing with the Yankees. You know, there's not some huge blockbuster deal in which the Yankees are going to acquire 5 all-stars anytime soon. These guys who are struggling, DJ LeMahieu, Giancarlo Stanton, said that those are the guys that got to start hitting.
Buster, 21 out of 54 games this year, they've scored 2 or fewer runs, and only 2 other teams are that bad. 21 out of 54, they averaged 3.57 runs per game in May. That's their 3rd fewest run scored in a month since 1994. Buster, they lead the league in grounded into double plays and outs made on the bases. They are a station-to-station team, and they lead the league in outs made on the bases. These are all terrible signs, and we've been over this. They have too many guys who are complete all-or-nothing kind of hitters. Gary Sanchez, Giancarlo Stanton, even Aaron Judge. You can pitch pretty easily to those guys when they're not swinging very well. When they are, they hit historically long and hard home runs. But when they're swinging poorly, you can get them out. LeMahieu is a great player, a great hitter, and he doesn't look anywhere near like the guy who won a batting championship last year. I saw him roll over 3 times in 1 game on ground balls to the third baseman in a game that we did. They have significant offensive issues. And without Corey Kluber there for 2 months to help, you know, continue this great pitching they've had, I think you're right. I would be concerned, greatly concerned, if I were a Yankee fan right now.
All right. Scale of 1 to 10, where would you put it? Especially because you just saw the Red Sox yesterday in the game you did against the Astros. They didn't have a good day, but they have had a great season. And you're seeing the level of dominance from the Tampa Bay Rays recently. So on a scale of 1 to 10, knowing that it's possible that within a week, the Yankees deficit out of first place in the American League East could be double digits, Tim.
Yeah, as always, though, Buster, I'm going lower than you on the panic scale. I'm going to go at a 7 instead of what, a 9.5 for you. I still think their pitching is so good, even without Corey Kluber, that they're going to find a way. With Severino coming back, we'll see what he does. Britton coming back. I think they can stay in the race because of their pitching more than anything else. But you're right. The Red Sox are good, Buster. I don't care what happened yesterday. The Blue Jays are a nightmare to face when they're really swinging the bats. And the Rays are the best team in the American League right now, for goodness sake. They won 16 out of 17. Rich Hill just finished a month at age 40 where you just shake your head like, how could that happen? But this is how the Rays do things, and they're not going away. They're just as good, if not better, than they were last year. And that's after losing two quality starting pitchers.
I just turned in my power rankings for this week, and I have Tampa Bay first and then those three National League West teams following them. I mean, Tampa Bay right now is unbelievable. With how they're performing. Also unbelievable, Jacob DeGrom. He started for the Mets last night, and along the way, he did this.
Boom, we think in terms of the month, every 100 at-bats.
And DeGrom ripped one into right for a base hit. Peraza's going to be waved around. The throw to the plate by Riddick. He's safe.
Yep, Jacob DeGrom, another hit. Another RBI. The Mets win last night. DeGrom was spectacular again. That sound from SNY. You heard the voice of Ron Darling and Gary Cohen. And as of this moment, Tim, Jacob DeGrom has scored 4 runs and driven in 3 runs. He has allowed 4 unearned runs for the entire season. He has a 0.71 ERA. He has struck out 46% of the batters he's faced. When I talked to Dom Smith the other day, he said to me that teammates look at DeGrom like he's a mythic figure, like a superhero, and that you can tell in moments when he gets mad that he's going to strike everybody out. And the more that I thought about it this morning, Tim, I think you can make an argument, and you know me, I'd love to do my superlatives, that DeGrom is arguably, the DeGrom of this moment is arguably the best pitcher that baseball has ever seen. What do you think?
All right. It's unbelievable how good he is. 0.71 ERA entering June. The last pitcher to be that low qualifier was Chris Short, who had a 0.64 in 1964. He averaged over 100 miles an hour on his velocity his fastball velocity. That's what he did last night. It's a complete joke. And as a hitter, he's ridiculous. But I can't go there yet, Buster. Pedro Martinez, 1999-2000, in the middle of the steroid era when runs were being scored at an outrageous number, Pedro's ERA those 2 years was 1.90. The league ERA was 4.90. He was 3 runs below the league average. That's why, as great as DeGrom is, I can't put him ahead of the Pedro that I saw in 1999-2000. But DeGrom is the best pitcher that I've seen since Pedro in 99-2000. And that is really saying something.
Yeah, he's just unbelievable. And also unbelievable last night, how about Kevin Pillar coming back and being activated less than 2 weeks after taking a fastball to the face? Also good news for the Mets. They get Pete Alonso back. They have the lead in the National League East. But I love the claps from Kevin Pillar's teammates when he came up for his first at-bat. And, of course, he got a hit, Tim.
Right. And, Buster, again, I say this far too often. Baseball is the hardest game in the world to play. And it's the most underrated game given its danger and the courage it takes to play the game. If any other person in the world gets hit in the face with a pitch, they never go near home plate ever again. They are too afraid. But big leaguers get over it. and they get back in there because they know if I don't get back in there, I'll never get back in there again. And for Kevin Pillar to get back in the box after hitting, being hit in the face with a pitch is just another reason, whether you like baseball players or not, to admire the courage that they show, because that is a really dangerous game. We did that game that night, Buster, and my heart jumped out of my chest when I saw him get hit in the face. It scares the life out of me to see that. And for him to return 2 weeks later and get a hit is just a real tribute to Kevin Pillar and to baseball players everywhere, because they are more courageous than the rest of us.
A really ugly moment for baseball, an ugly episode for baseball over the weekend. Marcell Ozuna arrested after having a domestic violence incident that was witnessed by police on Saturday, Tim. And look, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with this. Major League Baseball has started its investigation. But I would say this, you know, a lot of times when these cases happen, Major League Baseball goes in and essentially plows in the wake of the information that's gathered by authorities. And in a lot of, as you know, in a lot of domestic violence cases, the spouse or the girlfriend, after initially talking or maybe not talking initially, they don't want to talk to anybody about what happened. In this case, what's so different is that the police actually witnessed, according to the police report, some of the violence that happened. And that's part of the reason why I don't think that Marcell Ozuna will be on a baseball field again this year, even after he comes back from those two broken fingers. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the police being there changes things completely, because as you said, there's no he said, she said anymore. This is the police seeing it. So I would be shocked if he played another game for the Braves this year. And I mean, other players have come back and played after domestic violence incidents, but this one just from a great distance seems to be different to me. And it will be really interesting and sad to see where this story goes.
And he is facing a significant suspension, and you hope that his wife, Genesis, that she's okay and that she's now safe. I want to ask you about the conversation that's going on in baseball about foreign substances. I got to say, you know, we've been talking on the podcast in recent weeks about how this is sort of percolating. I feel like it's now beginning to explode, Tim, at the team level, where the anger, the frustration among hitters about these ugly numbers that are offensive numbers that are being produced around baseball, lowest batting average ever, the highest strikeout rate ever, is beginning to manifest. And I think players are sort of, you know, if, you know, there was once a code in talking about the use of foreign substances, because the, you know, all position players know that probably some of their teammates are doing stuff as well. I think that's starting to break down. I think that there's a level of anger that's built up over this, because the use of foreign substances has been weaponized to the point that it's just not a question of pitchers using it to get a tacky feel on the ball. It's, in the eyes of a lot of hitters, clearly being used for additional spin rate on fastballs and on breaking balls. And that's part of why hitters are struggling. I heard this incident. I talked about it on Friday, how in recent weeks there was a team that felt like for sure that the pitcher on the other team was cheating, and he was digging into his glove for essentially what they viewed as super glue. And so they were screaming at him, stop cheating, stop cheating, stop cheating. And their feeling was they kind of intimidated him into stopping. And the next inning, they wound up getting a really big hit. I heard more specifically over the weekend that the substance the spider tech adhesive, you know, those plastics that are put on people's body, that's part of what some pitchers are using, that adhesive, and that the adhesive, whether it's from the super glue or the spider tech, is so strong now that some pitchers don't like putting it on their skin because they're afraid they're not going to be able to get it off, Tim. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I'm worried about this too, Buster. And in that strikeout story that I wrote a couple weeks ago, I quoted Kevin Seitzer, who was not angry, the hitting coach for the Braves, but he said that this year, a bunch of his players have come back to the plate saying, come back to the dugout after striking out saying, I've never seen a ball move like that. And they said, a ball cannot move like that without help. And maybe that's the help these pitchers are getting, is this extra substance to make the ball spin even faster. Kevin Seitzer has been a big leaguer for, you know, as a coach and a player for 35 years. He knows the way a baseball moves. And if a ball is moving differently and his hitters are saying, I've never seen that before, that is a red flag. And this needs to be investigated because the pitchers have all these advantages to begin with. And now if they're getting a truly unfair advantage, which it appears certain days they are, then baseball needs to crack down on this. I'm not sure how you do it. I'm not sure how you enforce it, but we got to look into this now closer than we have.
Now, you know, I love coming up with ideas on this stuff and I love fixing Major League Baseball's problems and doing Rob Manfred's job. Here's my idea, Tim. I really think that this is the point where Major League Baseball can enforce the rule that's on the book by ordering umpires to essentially check all pitchers as they go to the mound. In other words, just do an equipment check. Hey, show me your glove. Show me your wrist, show me your forearms, that sort of thing. And to create sort of a blank slate, you know, reliever comes in and one of the person who greets him on the mound is the umpire. And it takes 5 seconds for the umpire to check everything. And at that point, I think because most players, I think, would be in favor of a level playing field. I think at that point, if something changes during the course of the game, let's say there's a pitcher who's using this stuff. And then suddenly in the third inning, his pitches are moving all over the place. I think that it would be easier in that circumstance for a manager, you know, an Alex Cora, an Aaron Boone, a Kevin Cash, Brian Snitker, to basically go to the umpires and say, look, our data that we're collecting said his spin rate just jumped by 20%, and we want you to go to the mound and check on him. I think that would help to get baseball past the gentleman's agreement. What do you think?
Well, as always, you have a different idea, Buster, and I'm just worried on several levels with all the pitching changes that we take. I think it's going to take more than 5 seconds to check each pitcher. And let's also understand, as you know, I've had managers tell me that, you know, every catcher in the league has something on his body. So when he wants to throw back a baseball with some pine tar on it or something to give a great feel, all he's got to do is rub it up against his, you know, his shin guards. And now the pitcher's got essentially a doctored ball. Eduardo Perez told me something I'd never thought about. He said, you remember when the catcher would come to the mound and the pitcher puts his hand on the catcher's back, like, all right, let's talk about what we're going to throw there. Eduardo said some of those catchers have that substance, whatever it is, on the back of their uniform. And the pitcher is getting a substance from the guy's uniform just by patting him on the back. I would have never thought that in a million years. So if we're going to check every pitcher, I think that's impractical, even though it makes sense. And I don't think it can be enforced. And the pitchers aren't the only one with stuff on them. That's part of the problem.
All right, before you go, I'm going to quiz you. The other day we saw Josh Donaldson score the 2 millionth run in Major League Baseball history. Question for you is, who scored the millionth run in baseball history?
I think that was the Bull, Bob Watson, who I believe was the first guy to hit for the cycle in both leagues also. And Bob Watson was a big, strong man. Am I right?
I knew you would know that. Way to go, Tim. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster. Thank you. And don't ever run into a hay machine. What's it called again?
A hay mower.
Hay mower.
I was an idiot, okay? I was like, I was so stupid.
I walked into the trunk of my car, okay? I'm no better than you. Take care.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. How are you, Buster?
I'm doing okay. I'm going to throw the same question at you that I got that was thrown at me on Get Up this morning that I just threw at Timmy. We're throwing, it's like being passed around like a hot potato. Scale of 1 to 10. For the Yankees, what's your level of panic? I had it at 9.5. Tim had it at a 7.
Wow. You know, I mean, I appreciate Timmy's, you know, level-headedness, but I think I'll end up in the middle there and go about an 8. I mean, I think the offense has been really concerning. The fact, you know, that stat about how many games where they've scored 3 or fewer runs, the only team with more is the Pirates. That's been true for a couple of days now, and they keep adding on those kinds of games and, you know, getting swept in Detroit by the Tigers, then coming home, playing the Rays, and not quite getting up for that game. I mean, I do think they'll win some more games this week, but it's a tough schedule ahead with the Rays and the Red Sox just even through Sunday. And that offense has been so inconsistent. And that really concerns me for this team moving forward.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
So number 3 is 59. So since 1996, which was the first season with at least one wild card, the first full season, 85 of 144 eventual division champions held at least a share of that division lead entering June 1st. So that's 59, that's 59%. So if you're looking at the teams, you're looking at the fact that the Yankees are not in first place in that division right now, that's what they're up against. And something else in the standings that stood out to me is the top records in the National League are all in the NL West, the Giants, Padres, and Dodgers. So since 1996, there's only been one other season where the top three records in either league were all from one division entering June. And that was in 2013 when the Cardinals, Pirates, and Reds all had the three best records in the NL. And of course, they all made the playoffs. That was the second season with two wild cards. So we'll see what we see. I mean, I thought the Giants might fade by now, but they're still there in it with the Padres and Dodgers at this point.
Number 2.
Number 2 is 23. So entering today for the third straight day, Ronald Acuña Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Fernando Tatis Jr. are all in the top 3 in homers in the majors. And right now they're all tied for the lead with Adolis Garcia. So they're all 23 years old or younger. Before 2021, we'd only had 3 players that young, under 24, being top 4 in the majors in home runs entering a day, at least 15 homers into a season on one day in MLB history. It was June 11th, 2015. It was Bryce Harper in second. He was 22 years old. And Jock Peterson and Mike Trout both tied for 4th at 23 years old. So this had only happened once in MLB history, at least this many homers into a season. Now it's happened in 3 straight days, which is just amazing for the youth in this game.
Number 1.
Number 1 is 101 for Jacob DeGrom. So Jacob DeGrom last night, I mean, that was an incredible start. I know he only threw the 70 pitches. I know that the bullpen came in and gave up some runs, but Jacob DeGrom, I mean, I was completely just not believing the velocity numbers that I was seeing from him, especially in those first couple innings of that game. So he had 2 strikeouts on 101 mile an hour pitches or faster. That's tied for the most by any starter in a game in the pitch tracking era, along with Justin Verlander on September 29th, 2010. So not only has this only happened one other time, but it was a while ago. It was in 2010. He threw 10 101 or faster mile an hour pitches, which is tied for the most by a starter in a single game since 2008, with a start by Noah Syndergaard and a start by Yordano Ventura. And I mean, it's not just the velocity. He has the third lowest ERA entering June since earned runs became official in both leagues in 1913, if we go with a minimum of 45 innings. The only guys with a lower ERA than his 0.71 were 1945 Al Benton at 047 and also in 1945 Boo Ferris at 057. So he's doing things we've literally never seen before.
So two quick follows for you. One, and I think it's because of what we've seen in the last 15 years with the number of Tommy John surgery. I got to say, when I see a pitcher throwing that hard, that consistently as great as DeGrom is, there's a part of me that cringes a little bit. And you're like, it's like to me running a, you know, a race car in the red with RPMs. And it worries me a little bit. What about you?
Of course. I mean, I think that we've been trained to really shy away from those high velocities. I mean, they're incredible, but they do add that concern. But I will say that he's been doing this consistently, adding velocity for a handful of years now, and has not led to any elbow type injuries. The injuries that he's had have not been those. So that gives me some confidence. And I will say that a lot of people have been pointing out how his velocity almost seems effortless. And that also gives me a little bit of hope in terms of the actual motion and whether it might lead to eventual injury. But of course, when you see 101.4 on the StatCast page, I'm like, what is he doing? I'm so stressed out, but it's also incredible.
I turned in my power rankings for ESPN.com today. Who would be your number one team as of today?
I think it would be the Padres. I'm trying to think.
Really?
I think I voted in some the other day. And now I'm trying to remember that maybe that's totally wrong. Maybe that's totally wrong. But I mean, I don't know. I know the Giants have a better record, so I know people are going to be mad about that, but they've been so good. I mean, who is your team?
Tampa Bay Rays.
Of course.
Playing as well as they are, that as dominant as they are, you know, as great as they were in May, and just dominating teams right now.
Offense, of course.
And then so that, but it's cool because I actually this morning when I sat down to do it, I was choosing between the Rays and the Padres, but then okay. Tampa Bay is so hot. I just had a hard time picking against them.
No, that's a great point. I should have, I think that I may have had them. I'm confusing maybe my AL and NL, but I think I did put the Padres first, but I'm looking at run differential plus 81, but they've had some blowout games, but either team. I mean, I think those are the top two for sure. And I do think the Rays are maybe not getting the full credit they deserve for what they've done lately. So I'm glad you pointed that out all for them.
All right, Sarah. Great to talk with you. We'll see you on Thursday.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
On Monday, Red Sox manager Alex Cora talked with Roxy Bernstein on ESPN Radio.
All right, Chris, Red Sox and Astros today from Houston on this Memorial Day, joined by the skipper of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. And coming into today, Alex, your team's playing great. You've won 7 out of 10, won your last three. What's been the key for the terrific start that your ball club has had?
I do believe our starters have done an amazing job, our starting rotation. It feels like on a daily basis, they'll give you five solid innings to give us a chance to be in the ball game and let the offense do their work. There's other days that they go six, and they've been very consistent since day one. Just sticking to the plan and actually executing. And we're very proud of them. We're very happy with the way they've been going. And I do believe also that we've been very lucky health-wise. You know, they have posted every 5 days, and that's very important at the big league level.
Coming into the season, there is, look, obviously so much attention, Alex, surrounding the Yankees, the season that Tampa Bay had a year ago, a lot of excitement about a young Toronto team, and not many people were talking about the Red Sox coming into this season. But for you, has this team almost, at least to this point, exceeded your expectations for this team?
I don't know. I think on a daily basis, We felt that we were gonna be good throughout the season. We saw it in spring training. We did a good job preparing these guys to be ready for opening day. We played good defense. We had good at bats and the pitching side of it. I felt that people forgot the guys that we were gonna pitch every 5 days. And if you go through our rotation, you know, Nate, been there, done that. Richards with a lot of upside. Eduardo, obviously coming from what happened last year, but he's a solid starter at the big league level. Pivetta, a lot of upside. And Martin, he's been, you know, really good, you know, or good throughout his career. And he's our fifth starter. And we believe that we're going to be good. I don't know about records and all that stuff. We actually feel like, you know, we can be better offensively. And there's a few things that we got to keep working. But we felt coming into the season that it was going to be, you know, a tough AL East, but we were going to be in the mix of the whole thing. And so far, so good.
You mentioned Eduardo. It's a pretty remarkable story, considering what he dealt with last year and the heart issues, falling out, well documented from the COVID battle that he had. How have you seen him progress and to get back into a major league rotation after what he had to deal with?
Yeah, I mean, the first five were really good. You know, he was building up and obviously had that dead arm episode in spring training, so he started a little bit later. But I think he started struggling in Arlington command-wise. I think his cutter hasn't been as sharp as it was early in the season and in 19. But he's getting there. I do believe that he had two good innings in Philly towards the end of the last one that put him in a great spot coming into this this outing. Mechanic-wise, he's very close to get to where he wants to be, get. One thing for sure, I'm happy that he's posting every 5 days. You know, after what happened last year, we have to be realistic, right? This guy, when you talk about heart issues, you never know what the future is going to hold. And the fact that he's posting for us is very important. But I do believe he's getting close. And it starts with command, obviously. But I think if that cutter gets sharper and smaller, good things are going to happen.
Last thing for you, Alex. You brought up something interesting. We were on a Zoom with you before getting ready for the ball game in our pregame meeting, and you talked about your time at ESPN really helped you prepare to be a manager at the major league level. Explain that to our audience, and what are some of the things that you picked up while you were working with us at ESPN and around the game of baseball?
Yeah, I think, you know, working with the research department, talking about numbers and opening my eyes to other information was huge. You know, this is something that we have to deal on a daily basis as managers, coaches, and you know, in the baseball world, without numbers and information, you ain't going nowhere. And to do it that way and to start, you know, opening my eyes and my knowledge, you know, somewhere else, it was amazing. You know, Sarah and Bonds, you know, they were amazing for me. We still stay in touch for certain things, you know, but I do believe just being part of that group and doing the research and getting ready for baseball tonight at 10 p.m. or at 2:30 in the morning after college football, it was amazing. And without that experience, no chance I'll be a big league manager.
Alex, appreciate the time. You guys are playing great baseball. It's fun watching your ball club. Thanks for the time again.
Thank you. Have fun.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Mr. Jakey RS at JakeyRS79. He writes in, my wife and I were talking about Naomi Osaka in the media, and we have baseball questions. Pre-COVID, who determined how much access reporters have to players? Do players have any media obligations? How are the rules in baseball different than tennis?
Yeah, before COVID, the teams, you know, in conversation with players, and also you've got the player association involved, sort of determine what the media access is. You know, for years, the clubhouses were required to be open 3.5 hours before each game. That has been narrowed down gradually over time. The ability of the media to be in the clubhouse has been reduced. There is not a specific obligation. Like I can't remember hearing about, you know, a player being fined because he wasn't available to the media. My feeling, and I've talked about it in the past in the pod, if someone want to talk to the media, that's totally fine. As long as they're consistent. In other words, I don't want to hear a player say, I don't want to talk to media. And then he does an interview with, you know, one reporter, a favorite reporter. And two, if you choose not to talk to the media, then you've also sacrificed the right to complain about something that's reported. But I never cared. Like if a player said, I don't want to talk to media, I'd be like, that's fine. Then I'm going to go talk to somebody else about you.
All right. A lot of questions from not a lot of questions, but a lot of bleacher tweets formulated between Mr. Jakey and his wife. We appreciate that teamwork.
Nice.
There. Next up, we have Billy Flanagan at Billy Flan. He writes in, curious why you play audio clips from TV feeds when radio broadcasts by nature describe the action so much better. You could really tell the difference in the Baez rundown. And I'll just say that we don't have access to all the radio calls, so that's why we kind of mix it up a little bit. But we prefer the radio calls, right?
Yeah, well, and we have conversations about it all the time where you and I are like, okay, which is, for lack of a better way to describe it, a better call for what we're trying to do in the podcast. And we actually had a conversation about that call specifically the other day. Yeah. And I think both you and I love the energy of Boog Shambi and Jim Deshays, but also understood that we'd have to do some splaining about what happened in the play, because you're right. It is different on television than it is on than the calls are on radio. But Jim Deshays' energy was so I love Jim Deshays yelling, keep running.
Go to third.
That was pretty cool the other day. That's part of the reason why we played that. But it's a fair question, Billy.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Art at Golf. I'm not even going to try and read that. Just Art. He writes in, what logical reason is there for making a team play two doubleheaders in 3 days, especially with one against a division rival? I'll wait for you to ignore the question since it's about the White Sox. Art, my man, this is a good question, but we had the White Sox GM on the show last week. We talk about the White Sox all the time. I don't understand why you think Buster ignores the White Sox.
Who was the last player to appear on the pod? That would be Lance Lynn, pitcher for the White Sox. By the way, his hash is it's Twitter, Golf Lifer.
Lifer, okay. Got it.
Okay, I think that's part of what he's going. Look, you know, and we saw this last year with what happened with the Cardinals, where they had the COVID shutdown with other teams. I think the way that baseball looks at it now is these are unusual circumstances. And if you have to play five doubleheaders in 7 days, whatever, just make it work. And I think the players generally in organizations understand that that's how these are going to be handled. But, it's less than ideal. And the Mets are going to be dealing with this all during the year because they've lost so many games off the schedule between the COVID situation beginning of the year and with the weather they've had.
Really interesting to see how it plays out. Last one for day, Brian Stone King, forever school of sweat in our hearts. He writes in, watching Kershaw today and realizing that the dude is still really good. He doesn't seem to get referenced that way much anymore. Is it due to the postseason instances that have caused the majority to forget about how great he is?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think his lot is cast. To me, you know, he's always going to be remembered as one of the greatest regular season pitchers of all time. I was happy for him that the Dodgers won the World Series so he could get past that narrative. We don't have to talk about how he never won a World Series, but that's always going to be part of the conversation about his career. And even Kershaw said he understands that. And I agree. I think that has obscured some of his greatness. I would say this. I'll stand on what I said to Tim. I think right now, Jacob deGrom of this moment is the best pitcher that we've ever seen.
Alrighty, everyone, that does it for Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.